This is the Middle Chamber Books and Music Podcast, episode number 36 for Tuesday, March 5th, 2013. More organizations than ever before are getting into producing video for their websites and for other promotional purposes. Now more than ever, people producing video need to learn how to behave when they're on camera. Manoush Zomorodi is our guest on this edition of the Middle Chamber Books podcast, and she'll tell us about how to prepare for being on the air. I'm your podcast host, Steve Lubetkin. Welcome to the Middle Chamber Books and Music podcast. I'm your podcast host, Steve Lubetkin, and the bookseller at middlechamberbooks.com. In this podcast, we present interviews with authors and creative professionals talking about their work. Manoush Zomorodi is a freelance reporter, moderator, and media consultant. Her multimedia guide, Camera Ready, How to Present Your Best Self and Ideas on Air or Online, is in the top 100 journalism ebooks on Amazon. She's also host of New Tech City, a new segment on the public radio station WNYC, which looks at how New York's tech boom is changing the way we live. Manoush also works with nonprofits like Human Rights Watch and the Council on Foreign Relations on their multimedia strategies. From 1995 to 2006, Manoush reported and produced for BBC News, with postings in Washington, Berlin, Brussels, and New York. As a freelance reporter and anchor, she covered business and technology for Reuters Television in New York from 2006 to 2010. She lives in Brooklyn with her husband, NY1 reporter and anchor Josh Robin, and their two kids. She joined us over Skype from her office in New York. Manoush, thanks for joining us on the Middle Chamber Books and Music podcast.
I'm so happy to be here, Steve.
Why don't you start, Manoush, by telling us a little bit about your broadcast career and how you got from reporting broadcast news to writing about how to appear best when you're involved in a broadcast interview situation.
Okay, so I started out as a foreign news producer for the BBC. I was based in Washington, D.C., but, you know, at the time, there was, you know, the nightly news. There weren't any 24-hour channels. We didn't even have, like, much of a website for the BBC. That was my first job and the first time I had email ever in my life. So it gives you a sense, you know, it's like we would travel the world and cover most of the United States and some of Canada, some of Mexico for the BBC. And it was a time, I think it was sort of the golden age of broadcast news. I had a cameraman. I had my own correspondent who I could boss around. Sometimes I even had an audio guy. And I think it was really a chance to learn proper filmmaking techniques, how to tell a story with video, because there was time for me to learn all of that, how to shoot something beautifully, how to craft your script to go with it, what it takes to do a nice edit. And I was also doing radio at the time, too. It was called Bi-Media at the time. It seems extremely small-minded here 17 years later. So after that, I was based in Berlin for a little while, and then after 9/11, I came to New York and ran Bureau here a little bit more, but I was doing more and more reporting. Part of it, the reason why I wanted to get into reporting was because I had been so frustrated with some of the correspondents that I had who maybe were good journalists in terms of digging up information, but when it came to presenting the information, they fell flat, and it was frustrating to me that they'd have such great stories or data, and yet because their presentation wasn't great, the story wasn't great. People didn't care about their information, and it seems sort of, you know, artificial, but presentation is extremely important, and it's not just, you know, your makeup and your hair. It's about the lighting, the audio, the way you frame shots, how little or much you say in terms of your script, and just your whole way of being on camera. So I started to do I was reporting for Reuters a little bit. I had kids, so I spent a lot of time pushing the stroller and thinking more than doing. And I thought, you know, I should just write this all down. And when I found out that there was a way of embedding video into an ebook, I thought, you know, that's the perfect way to show someone how to be great on camera. You need to have video to show how to be great on video, right? Sort of sounds sort of meta. but that really inspired me. And I had been doing some media training on the side, so it sort of seemed like a great opportunity to write a book, which I'd never really wanted to do before.
I think one of the things that impressed me about it when I first came across the book was the concept that people need to understand how to do this, to do it themselves for content-driven communication strategies.
Well, I think you're ahead of the curve on that one, Steve, because it's interesting to me. I was like, this is the perfect book to write now. It's the year of video. But then when you think about it, like, how many years have we been saying that now? It's the year of video. And people are still not doing it. I keep thinking that they're coming to it, but they're coming to it more and more. But I think video is pretty intimidating. People think that it's expensive. They, you know, like being at their desk, eating their sandwich while they're on a conference call, as opposed to sort of getting their act together a little bit more when they do a video call. And I think that it seems like a sort of high barrier to entry. But what I hope comes across in the book is that if you get, you know, pretty basic skills down and get into sort of a rhythm, then video should be part of everything you do. And I think, as you know, the more we see news organizations not having as much money, the advertising models completely being upended, that companies and organizations are creating their own media. And it's not like, buy this, it's amazing. It's news you can well and truly use that will make me feel like I like your brand because you taught me something. I think that's the key to it.
Yeah, we've seen several organizations, large companies, enterprise-sized companies like Intel and Cisco and Walmart, who have made a huge commitment to creating video, to actually repurposing their internal communications teams as news-gathering teams rather than just PR people. How does a smaller company begin to get their arms around doing something like that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the people I work with, a client of mine, is Human Rights Watch. And I find that the nonprofits are kind of ahead of the curve on this one because they don't have to monetize, right? They can try out things, and if they don't work, then they try something else. But they've definitely been doing that. So Human Rights Watch, just for example, they go into the field and do research. They talk to people on the ground. Their process was something that they were never really explaining to people. So I really encourage them to, you know, take a camera, record what your process is, because the more people understand your process, how you get this valuable information, the more they're going to feel an affinity towards you. So if you're a small company, I was thinking about like a car rental company, what kind of content could they create that would be useful to me? Well, if they had a defensive driving post, you know, that explained to me very simple things I could do on the road when it's snowy or icy, or if, you know, God forbid somebody gets in my lane, that would be really useful to me, you know. I think it's about information that really doesn't necessarily have much to do with the brand, but just shows that you are smart and caring and matchy, at the risk of using a my husband's word.
It's the idea is to give up some useful information rather than just do a commercial.
Exactly. I think, you know, this audience today, and I'm sure this seems like a no-brainer to millennials, but it's interesting to those of us above a certain age, this audience today is very savvy. They understand that how things are made. They understand the angle. There's something they've been behind the scenes. Behind the scenes doesn't really exist anymore. So I think creating just plain old ads, it just doesn't cut it. I think it just gets filtered. It goes in one ear and goes out the other. Maybe there's some subliminal advertising psychologists would claim otherwise. But I just noticed, like, I don't even watch the pre-rolls, you know. If they were telling me something interesting that I wanted to learn, then maybe I would. But, you know, I just go look away, and then I come back. It just doesn't go through. Does not compute.
The other kind of web video that I find doesn't work terribly well are the one-off videos people put on their websites that are essentially them saying, "Hi, welcome to my website."
Totally. I wrote a post about that one, too. There was this guy who was doing a really... I think he owned a bunch of cabins in West Virginia, and he was doing such a great job of writing blog posts that helped people when they came to the area. You know, where's the best place to go fishing? Where is the best picking spot? All kinds of real, you know, good travel advice information that would drive people to the site. And then since they got such great information, probably book a cabin through him. But that was exactly it. He had a video that was like him walking really stilted through a cabin and being like, welcome to West Virginia. It's beautiful here. You know, it just was so lame. He should have just taken one of those really useful blog post that he had written and turned it into a video that showed, you know, the kind of fish that you can get when you go fishing there, or that really demonstrated what kind of views you can get to if you hike a little bit further for that picnic. You know, video is a chance to show something, to demonstrate something. It can't just, why should I be listening to you talking to me at me into the camera? I need to see something.
It's the old advice from Don Hewitt from 60 Minutes. Tell me a story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And using video to show what goes on in the business rather than someone talking about what goes on.
Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely true. I have seen, you know, when they're very highly produced, I think it can be effective to do interviews with people that are cut really, you know, it has to be a little bit more artistic, I think, when it's just interviews being cut together. But that can also be interesting too. You know, if there's a, let's say it's your consultancy and you're talking about, you know, defining native advertising, for example, and you did the exact same interview with all six of your consultants and then you edited it together really tight. So it was, you know, kind of a really energetic, dynamic video that was explaining a concept. I think that could work too, though.
Absolutely. What are some of the tips you would give people if they're just starting out to produce videos for their own website about how they should look, what they should wear, things like that? What are the basics?
Yeah, so, I mean, my whole thing is that, and again, this is a millennial question. There are some people who think that, you know, YouTube has shown us that quality doesn't matter. I think quality doesn't matter if it's like 13 seconds of a great white jumping out of the water or something like that, or if it's like Justin Bieber getting out of his car, then quality doesn't matter. But if you want people to engage with your content and they don't know who you are and you're not a great white, then I think you really do need to pay attention to the quality of it. And that means buying a $25 tripod at, you know, Radio Shack, and making sure that the audio is properly recorded. So that means, you know, probably an external microphone, not just recording with the sound off of your phone. Although sometimes that can work pretty well too. I mean, the iPhone records amazing video. It's really beautiful. I think brevity is key. A lot of people have these rambling videos that go on and on and on. Get someone to edit it for you if you don't know how to edit, or learn iMovie. It's not that hard, and the payoff is really good. In terms of the content, I think really write down on a piece of paper everything that you want to get across, and then sub it down, and then sub it down again. I have this thing called the top line method, where whenever I go on camera, I write down, you know, my top line, what I want to say, my 3 points that back it up, and then my last sort of thought that kicks the concept forward. Where should we be looking next? So if we were talking about the popularity of cats online, I would say, you know, the popularity of cats online, Steve, is just phenomenal. We know this because, I don't know, 92% of searches are cats, you know, ABC, right? And then maybe kick it forward to seeing what next year's search terms might be. Terrible example, but you get my point, that you really need to organize your thoughts, because brevity and conciseness is absolutely key when it comes to video.
How about the appearance? You talk in the book a little bit about people using makeup, which is probably alien to most people of my gender.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, what it is you don't want somebody watching your video and having them think the whole time, wow, his head is really shiny. Yeah, look at that glare. Ooh, it kind of hurts my eyes. Because then they're not listening to you. I'm not saying, like, go and, you know, go to the MAC cosmetics store and get made up to look like RuPaul. I'm just saying people shouldn't even notice what you look like. You should have makeup that doesn't even look like makeup. It just makes, you know, not shiny, basically. Nice looking clothes that, you know, if you're going to be against a white background, don't wear a white shirt. If you're going to be against a black background, don't wear a black turtleneck. There's some pretty basic rules to follow that just work well. If you know that your video is only going to be watched on YouTube, or, you know, if you're optimizing for mobile, to use the sort of key catchphrase right now, wear something bright that doesn't have a pattern, because look, when people are looking at a small screen, you really want to try and pop out of the out of whatever device they're looking at. So it's, you know, some pretty basic stuff.
What's your feeling about chroma key? Green screen is pretty popular. A lot of people, particularly in the Philly area, I don't know if it's popular elsewhere, but in the Philly area, there are a couple of producers who really push putting their people on a green screen and then chroma keying out the background and just having a white background behind them, which makes me wonder, like, why don't they just photograph them in front of...
Why don't they just use white?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think chroma... I have strong opinions about chroma, Steve.
Don't hold back, please.
I think it has to be perfect or don't do it at all. There is nothing that looks more cheesy than a person who is so has like a fuzzy edge around them. It is just one way of saying, like, we are B-list, so not A-list. The cleanest way to do it, get one of those enormous rolls of white paper and set it up and then throw some big lights on you. You really can't go wrong. It just looks even light. It looks very clean. It looks very modern. Cheesy chroma key? Oh, please don't do it. It's just a recipe for disaster.
Thank you. You're just repeating what I've said to people and, you know, still they go on.
Look, people have ideas. They have to... I'm curious to know, after they watch it, do they admit that maybe it wasn't the right choice?
You know, it's hard to tell. What happens with a lot of clients, I'm sure you know, is, you know, they get excited about a particular concept. They execute the concept. They've written the check to the person who's convinced them to do it. And at that point, they're highly unlikely to admit that they spent money on something that wasn't a good idea.
Yes. So, well, simple is better. I really think simple is better. I think if you go with the principles, good lighting, good sound, very concise script, good presentation, you're that's 90% of it. Seriously, I really think that. I mean, the presentation thing also is, you know, if you don't think you're great on camera, either practice a lot, and it does take practice because people suddenly find out that they have strange tics when they turn go in front of the camera, or get someone who is really comfortable, because that's if you look uncomfortable or if you feel uncomfortable, then your audience feels uncomfortable. And then they don't want to watch you. It's just that simple. It's a very visceral thing, video, in a way that, that text and audio just cannot match.
So what's next for Manoush? You got the book out. You're still doing a lot of broadcast work.
Yeah, you know, I sort of thought I was going to go totally into consulting, and then this wonderful opportunity turned up at WNYC, the NPR affiliate station here in New York, and I'm doing a weekly show called New Tech City that's sort of looking at the amazing growth of the tech economy here in New York. And it's really, you know, it's really fun, and it's not, you know, Apple shares are down today. It's really looking at, for example, the other week we talked about the library system, how technology has changed the role of the library in our communities, and how there's sort of, you know, a lot of the head library people have been looking to Starbucks in terms of remaking what the library is in our community. So it's really nice to sort of translate what all this exciting entrepreneurship is doing for regular people too. I'm enjoying that a lot. I'm also starting to do, just trying out the platform Spreecast, which is an interactive video platform, sort of similar to Google Hangouts, but it has some other pluses in that it doesn't have to be in the Google space, that you can edit clips out of it, that you can invite people on camera, but you can vet them first, that you can integrate social into your interactive video chat. So that's been really fun. They sort of contacted me and said, you know, just come and use the platform. And I've been doing interviews with people on that, which I've really enjoyed. So how I bring it all together, not sure. Watch this space. Sort of thinking big ideas, but not ready to go there yet.
Okay. Well, we'll certainly be watching for it when you, when you roll out some cool new stuff. And we thank you for joining us on the podcast.
It was my pleasure. So fun to talk about my my pet peeves, Steve. You gave me an outlet.
Oh, we could go on.
Completely. To be continued.
All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Manoush Zomorodi is a freelance reporter, moderator, and media consultant based in New York City. Her multimedia guide is called Camera Ready, How to Present Your Best Self and Ideas on Air or Online. And you can get more information about Manoush and her book at manoushz.com. If you have comments or suggestions about these podcasts, including suggestions for other people you might want to hear an interview with, please write me at steve@middlechamberbooks.com. And as always, our theme music is provided by the Indianapolis Jazz Orchestra. It's called Cook the Books. We produce these programs in the studios of Lubetkin Global Communications in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We're on the net at lubetkin.net. These programs are copyrighted and may not be reproduced or cross-posted to other websites without express written permission from the copyright owner. If you are interested in sponsoring these programs, they are available for sponsorship. Just drop us an email or call us at 856-751-5491. For all of us here at Lubetkin Communications in the Middle Chamber Bookstore, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.